Hey guys, welcome to Right Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show, so get ready for interesting conversation, politics, news, current events, and a little bit of millennial humor. So today we have a lot of different topics. We're going to talk about John McCain's widow coming out in support of Joe Biden. We're going to talk about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what that means for the Supreme Court and the country. And what does it mean to be a Hispanic? And does that label actually really capture the essence of that person? So we're going to deep dive into that. We talk a lot about different issues today, but it's an interesting show as far as what is moving America right now, what is at the forefront of our political discussion, and we look into the future to the election and put it all together. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. How are you?
Good. How was your week?
Oh, it's been, a little hectic, but
hectic is good.
Hectic is always good. Hectic means business. It means work is going, it's full throttle. So I couldn't be happier about that.
Well, cheers to that. What are you drinking this morning?
I am drinking my vitamin water. Because I needed something that wasn't as heavy as coffee. So, and I wanted to get something that was going to offer me some concentration this morning.
Nice. I'm joining you with a nice hot cup of coffee. Pumpkin spice, of course, because I'm that basic.
Oh, okay. So basically we had one cold front and now every day is going to be pumpkin spice until,
yes, until summer. Yes, 'tis the season. Well, in fairness, I transitioned to white mocha once Thanksgiving is over.
Oh, okay, because that makes it all better.
Yeah, and then once we're really into December, it's white peppermint mocha.
Oh, my God. And you complain about my coffees being like sugar rushes.
Those are treats. You have yours every day. It's like, hello, sugar overload. Well, but they are yummy.
The idea is that they're a little addicting.
Do you prefer Dunkin' or Starbucks?
Oh, Starbucks. In my perspective, even though I may not agree with the company stances on a lot of issues, they still make a good coffee.
So that's the difference between conservatives and liberals, right? We'll still consume liberal company products. Liberals don't extend the same courtesy to conservative companies. Just look at Chick-fil-A.
Oh, well, yeah. The biggest, the funny thing is that Chick-fil-A's CEO was in a direct attack to the LGBTQ community. And I couldn't politicize my chicken sandwich. I just kept eating chicken sandwiches. Even then, I was probably given the most horrible looks
during the time. Here's the thing that always gets me. You can appreciate a company, their product, and I disagree with the motives, ideas, political points of view of the people that run the company, but hey, they make a darn good product.
Well, not only that, I think the other problem is that like any other fast food company, they're franchises. So the individual store is owned by a private citizen within your community. The employees are dependent on my purchasing of said product. So it's not just, it affects everybody. It doesn't just affect the CEO. I mean, the CEO obviously gets the net profit, but going to somewhere provides a job to the person that gives you the service. It provides a job to the person that cooks the actual meal. It provides a job to the person who actually takes the order. So those are three different people. You just provided jobs for three different people.
Well, the economics of that sometimes is difficult for people to grasp. People get very passionate about topics and then it's blinded with rage and the economic argument kind of flies out the window.
Oh, no kidding. And actually that gives a good segue to, and I know the biggest topic is going to be RBG today, but for me, it's the, I keep seeing on Instagram that a vote for Trump is a vote to violently against gay people. which I find hilarious because does that mean a vote for Biden is a violent vote against white people?
I like that one. I
I
like that.
why there should be there is no violence in voting, or there's and the funny thing is that to me that's a form of voter suppression because you
You know, maybe it's because I follow politics closely and I'm following the headlines, reading the articles, and have, of course, very passionate views about all things politics. But some of the arguments and stereotypes and ads that the Democrats are running this time around seem like, okay, so are you just running this because it's your generic argument? It doesn't even apply to Trump, but you're going to go ahead and run it because, hey, that's what our focus groups like in our base. So we're just going to run with that, even though it doesn't apply to 2020 at all. So some of that is true for like the arguments why gays should not vote Republican. Some of that is true for the arguments why Hispanics should not vote Republican. So it's just like a one size fits all. And I'm like scratching my head and going, okay, maybe I'm too involved in the weeds, but your platform doesn't make sense for 2020.
Well, I think that so for a long time there was this disingenuous nature to the political parties that they were pandering so much that they actually didn't commit to what their to their base, or they didn't commit at all to what they stood for. And I think that in both parties we got very tired of that. And I think that in 2020, or even actually it started in with Trump's first campaign for president, is that I'm no longer pandering. I'm not looking for disingenuous marketing strategies. Now you got someone who exactly tells you who he is, whether you like it or not.
Look, and here's the thing. That really matches the brand of politics that came out after Obama sprung on the scene. People forget this. The Obama campaign was a masterful marketing organism. The hope and change symbol that became synonymous with the campaign. It was everywhere, and they were very good at creating a character, a brand that was Obama. Trump was equally as successful at doing the same thing. So then you get somebody like Biden or Hillary Clinton, and it's just like, I don't know what you stand for. Your brand is just boring. And honestly, looking at you a little bit closely, you don't even have a brand.
Right. And on top of that, you're being pulled by five different ideologies, and they're all
Right. Well, did
bad.
you see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? I think she was doing a Facebook Live, and she was telling voters, you know, I don't care if you like Biden or not. This is not about that. You have to vote for him. And I'm looking at him like, okay, so vote for somebody you don't like. So basically, pinch your nose and press the button. Is that what
Yes.
you're saying, AOC?
Yes. Hold your nose and gag, as Mitch McConnell would say to Republicans any time that they had to vote for something they didn't like.
Well, you know what? I think I felt similar in 2012 with Romney. That was
Sure.
a lackluster team, and I think the results show.
Yeah, I think that there's twofold, right? Again, I think that the Republican Party was still pandering, and all this is in reaction to the Obama administration, because the Obama administration, here's the guy with the teleprompter telling you exactly, precisely, there was a precision to his tone, a precision to his speeches, and this very professorship-like presidency that didn't tell you the truth of how he felt. He only told you what he thought was necessary to tell you in order for you to feel a certain way. And I think that disingenuous nature to one's own personal stances on issues is what care basically cavaliered or created the caveat for the Trump. For the Trump bandwagon into saying, I don't want someone who's going to lie to me. I don't want someone who's going to present to me a personality that simply tells me or talks down to me. I want someone who's basically going to say what he thinks, whether I like it or not, tell me who he is, whether I like it or not, and provide and basically try to be more open in in communication to the American people. I didn't get open communication to the American people with Obama. I never felt that way. I always felt that his speeches and everyone says he's a great orator. I did not agree with that. I saw that and I was like, oh, this is a very condescending professor.
That's the problem, and I think you'll find that as a person has more education under their belt, and as a person it is more eloquent, it's very easy to fall into the trap of basically lecturing others that are less sophisticated. Obama was charismatic. That's the secret to his success, right? The problem is that when it came to policy discussions, he often went into that professor mode. And some people appreciate that. Some people like somebody that seems in charge and knowledgeable and, is in control. And some people just call BS on that and say, no, I don't need to be talked down to. You are not my superior.
And I think that that's like, and there was this sensibility that, well, you don't understand. Like for the Obama, the Affordable Care Act was probably the biggest sticking point with me with when it comes to his presidency, because here's a guy who's telling me, I don't care if you don't like this, but you're going to have it anyway.
I'm going to push it down your throat.
Exactly. And there was no discussion. And it's like, that's where I enjoyed Trump's administration, because Trump administration has taken different tones. Like, I am not here to come and tell you how to run your state. I will provide assistance. I will do everything I can to help you, but it's not my job. It's not what I do. I don't ram things down people's throats. But if I have to, if this is where it's going to get us to it, I'm going to do it in the most constitutional way that I can find. As opposed to Obama, which is, I'm just going to make a law and I'm going to use a new Democratic majority to destroy all political capital I have with the Republicans and pass health care.
Which is ironic that now Democrats trying to use the moral high ground to say, no, Republicans, you need to wait until after the election to fill the Supreme Court seat, because that's the right thing to do. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh yeah, because if the shoe was on the other foot, you would definitely do the right thing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Now, this is a good segue to RBG's death and the new vacancy. So, on that front, I will say honestly that I look for hypocrisy in the Democratic Party. I don't like hypocrisy on ours. But now that I'm reading more and more about how we're doing this, I feel more comfortable with confirming a new seat on the bench. Obviously, the first thing that gets thrown into my face when I talk to Democrats is, well, Merrick Garland, Merrick Garland, Merrick Garland. And I get it. We chose not to vote on Merrick Garland because of the fact that we got the majority in the Senate, which confirms justices. Therefore, during the previous cycle, therefore, we had the mandate not to confirm. And by the way, the non-confirming Supreme Court justices during an election year, guess who invented that rule? It wasn't invented by Republicans. It was invented by
Of
Biden.
course, of
It's
course.
called the Biden rule in the Senate.
Yeah. He's not
So,
that bright.
no. And then so it's it it and the Democrats broke the rule first. We then just broke the rule, and then we upheld the rule because we were in power, and now it's okay. And now we're breaking the rule because once the rule is broken, that's it. Rule does not mean anything anymore, as far as I'm concerned. And on
Here's the
top of,
thing.
yeah, go
Here's
ahead.
the thing. We get it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is an icon to many. And I'm gonna put aside my political hat and put on my lawyer hat. As a justice of the Supreme Court, as a female attorney, as someone who has represented a movement in this country for equality and female power, because her type of feminism is one that is not in your face. It's more based on merit. It's based on ability. I can appreciate her legacy. I respect it. As a member of the legal profession, honestly, I disagreed with her legal conclusions 95% of the time. And that 5%, usually I had some issue, but I agreed with the conclusion overall. What I'm trying to say, though, she needs to be revered. She was an important person in our history. With that said, that doesn't make her seat any less important or to Republicans, or it doesn't make her seat a liberal one. And some people are making that argument. And for a long time, some people, even in the legal profession, have said, well, if there's a liberal justice on the court, maybe they need to be replaced with a liberal justice to keep the equilibrium. Even Obama used that argument with Merrick Garland that he was conservative and that's why he was putting him on the court since he was replacing Scalia. And I reject that outright. Lifetime appointments, and that's what Supreme Court justices have. That's a really nice gig. And for a lot of people
It is
out
the
there,
it's the only monarchical aspect of our government.
well,
I
and
mean, it's
I just want to point out, even if they retire, let's take Sandra Day O'Connor, who is retired now for public life, but when she retired from the bench, and nothing really changed for her. She had an office paid by the taxpayer. She still got her same salary, government health insurance, which is superb because it's the type that Congress and the president and other high officials have. This is like one of the sweetest gigs you can get.
Yeah, I
So
mean, go ahead.
no, go ahead, go ahead.
I was only going to say that, I mean, as far as anything goes in our government, there is no such thing, there is no other position more unique than being part of the Supreme Court. To have a lifetime appointment when, and it's, you know, the funniest thing because in our books, right, here's Europe who has monarchical lifetime appointments, usually by God or their set or said God that provides them to be kings and queens of Europe. And here we are in the United States, and we say no, we're going to leave the lifetime appointment. We're going to leave the only appointment that provides lifetime employment to our justice system. That is a specific. That is almost like the most beautiful thing you, I mean, you took away the lifetime appointments from the executive and gave it to the judicial to have. And the idea for that was that the judicial is the caretaker of the entire system.
And I also think it's an acknowledgement that at some point you need to have a position that is not a political one, right? So
Absolutely.
there needs to be a buffer between, what the hungry rabble want and what the institution wants. And I think that having figures that have a long-term view is beneficial. You need somebody to look at it from an institutional perspective and say, you know, we get what you're trying to do. We understand it, but honestly, you're not there yet, or you need to work on arguments better, or you need to find a better basis for it. And I think that's productive. And historically, upper chambers or more the Senate, it have played similar roles in our society, right? Trying to hold off radical change as we progress into the future. But definitely, it's a very distinguished honor to be nominated. It's a opportunity of a lifetime to be confirmed. So, it having that seat and being able to play a role in American history like that, it's a unique experience.
Yeah, and I think aside from just the fact that it's a uniquely, not just a unique experience, but also a very, I mean, the rarity of it, right? There's only so many justices in our history that get to be part of this institution and their lifetime appointment, so they're there for quite a bit. And it is a it's I get what you meant by institutional, but I also think that it's our system has always believed that change needs to be done slowly, not quickly, which is actually the reason why our constitution is the oldest in the world, because others' constitution allowed for faster change. And what the and the problem is society doesn't change overnight. And when it does change overnight, the reactionary the opposing group that hates that change overnight will then cause revolution, and then you got fights going on and civil wars. So our system allows change to happen, but happen slowly. The system is not meant to have massive societal changes overnight. And I think that the Supreme Court and the justice system, for the most part, is that caretaker of that position. And it's the one that believes that we need to, it makes it a little bit harder for people to do their jobs. It makes it a little bit harder for the president because the judicial system does tell the president that he can't do something sometimes. And they also tell the legislature that they went too far in certain aspects.
So
So the
I think that's a nice way of summarizing that interesting relationship, right? Because
yeah.
it's an interesting dynamic where we respect you, legislator, we respect you, executive, as co-branches of government. But hey, we're sitting here on our bench looking at you, and if you're out of line, we're going to smack you upside the head.
Exactly. And that's the and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her legacy, her iconography. I mean, I told you, I mean, the moment that she died, I told you, this is huge. This is not a small a small, you know, the cultural significance of her iconography is can or speaks volumes. I compare her to Reagan's kind of popularity, specifically with the other side. So, for example, if Re for us in the on the right, Reagan's usually seen as the the beacon on the hill kind of president. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has that same comparable iconography on the Democrat side. She's been really a champion on their side as far as that's concerned.
So here's the thing. There's a lot of things that you can admire from her, okay? She, as a woman, as a professional, I really appreciate that she was one of the first women to really break out in the legal profession. And she had small children at the time, so she was balancing having a fulfilling career and raising children. The dynamics of the legal world during her time were very different now. A lot of people don't know this, but a once male-dominated profession, the majority of law school graduates nowadays are women. And I cannot emphasize this enough. It probably would not have happened if we did not have people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I think that's we need to acknowledge that. I don't care if you're on the right or on the left, that is an important part. Of course, she wasn't the only woman to do that. I mean, Sandra Day O'Connor was the first woman nominated and confirmed to the Supreme Court.
And a conservative justice to
Yes, a
that.
conservative justice. Well, oh,
I like Sandra. I love Sandra Day O'Connor. I disagree with you on
okay,
this one.
here. Sandra was disappointing at times and became a swing vote in her later years, and which was boggling to me considering who nominated her to the Supreme Court, which was Reagan. But I digress. So yeah, RBG
But
definitely.
she respectfully retired as opposed to ran her term until she died.
Well, I think it's because her husband was in ailing health, and I think that was a motivator. If not, she would have stayed on the court. She was very he, she's been very active in the years after she left the court. She's been very active. Openly support, I mean, she was really good friends with Kagan when she was president of the I should say dean of the law school. So there, let's just say that she became more progressive in her retirement than I imagined her to be. And that's not a knock on
Still,
her.
yeah. Well, she
That's
still
not a
retired during a Republican presidency and allowed us to replace her with a conservative justice.
Sure, I guess that's good. I at least she didn't retire during Obama. I guess that was good. We thank her for that. I'm sorry. I get it. She's very important. We should be proud of her as conservatives that she was the first woman nominated to the court. And people forget that because I've been hearing the coverage for RBG. She's like, oh, the w first woman to be nominated to the Supreme Court. And this is coming from news outlets. And I'm like going, that is actually factually false. Fake news
Yeah,
again.
absolutely. Sandra Day
So.
O'Connor. Sandra Day
But
O'Connor.
right, so I admire RBG's role in the evolution of women's rights. Honestly, like I said, I would not be sitting here having a podcast, being an attorney without women like her to pave the path for me before.
Yeah, it's
So,
including Sandra Day O'Connor.
including Sandra Day O'Connor, I just cringed. Like, if you could see my face right now, I just like gagged. It was
You
like,
have more
ugh.
good things to say about RVD before you
I
do.
don't know. I don't like turncoats. I've explained this to you. If you are loyal, if you are efficient, if you do your job, you are nominated to the bench to serve one role: protect that seat and protect conservative ideals and the Constitution. And if you cannot do that as a conservative nominee and seat, you have failed. I don't care what your progression is. And it's the same issues I have with Roberts. I get it though, Roberts, he's the Chief Justice, so there's institutional issues he has to worry about. But it's that thing. So Sandra Day O'Connor, yes, first woman, conservative, got it, whatever, but disappointing. Did you see Cindy McCain coming out in support of Biden? It's like this.
I thought that was miss. I mean, the problem. I can't believe she would even put her vote publicly like that. Her endorsement was basically a slap in the face in a lot of ways.
The McCains hated Trump. And
Oh, of course, and it was equal hatred, by the way, on
oh,
both
but you
sides.
know what? It's he said something once and it during a rally, and I was thinking about it when I saw her come out in support of Biden. You knew that McCain got basically a state funeral, right? When
Yes.
he passed away. There is no way that he could have gotten that without Trump approving it. And by the way, there is no require him for him to do so.
No, and I agree with that. I think that that was the problem is that the news media will never tell you what this president actually does or tries to do because everything is a controversy.
But
Everything is.
let's think about that. Like McCain, and I voted for McCain back in 2008, right?
So did I.
Well, you couldn't vote. You couldn't
Oh,
vote.
that's right. But I
We
wanted to.
I voted in with my blood, sweat, and tears because I was knocking on doors and volunteering and wearing my little button to school all the time. With that said, he was a very high-profile figure in the Republican Party for a long time. His father was a high-profile figure in the military. He was a POW. He came back. He married Cindy McCain after he divorced his first wife. He became a maverick in the Senate, and he was famous for having really at least from my view, really chummy relationships with Democrats on the Hill. And sometimes it seemed like he was more of a Democrat than a Republican. And he had that sort of reputation. And then when he ran against Obama, you want to talk about the most lackluster and lack of a backbone candidate we've ever had on the Republican ticket?
No kidding, especially when he's told that he has to pick Sarah McCain, Palin to be his running mate.
Well, I'm sorry. The only reason he chose her is because otherwise, if he put another white man on his ticket when he was competing against Obama, nobody was going to pay attention. So he had to bring something to the table, something interesting to the table. And Sarah Palin, that role was too big for her at the time. She was a first-term governor from Alaska. Was she maybe could have been ready later on? Who knows? But he made that choice. And honestly, I think it was the wrong choice at the time. And he lost in a very humiliating way. Like it wasn't even close.
Well, I also think that there's something to be said about history and how it will be perceived, because I think that it was also a losing battle to go up against the first black candidate on the other side for the presidency, as well as the catastrophe of the
Yeah, but he had no
2008
backbone.
fiasco.
Remember, he would defend it. Remember, McCain would go out and defend Obama when on campaign stops, when people would, make remarks about Obama and who he was and calling him a socialist and this and that. And McCain would go out of his way and say, no, he's a good man.
You're competing against someone. Don't call him a good man. Just don't call him. You don't want to call him anything bad? Fine,
I
but
mean,
don't call him anything good.
I mean, if you yourself is saying, think about this. If you yourself are saying, oh, my opponent is a good person, and I don't hear any criticism of his ideas from you at all, because McCain never did. It was more of, oh, these are my ideas. And the other person is more charismatic than you and is a lot more interesting than you. Then if I was in a, an independent voter and I'm looking at that situation, I'm going, I'm going to go for the more interesting one because you even admit he's good. You gave him already the good character pass. So why would even I look at you? You're boring and really your ideas are stale. That's how I would look at it.
Well, and I think that's the reason why he lost, right? I mean,
Right.
that in Obama's marketing strategy of hope. What was hope mean? No one knows, but hope.
Well, what does Make America Great Again mean? That means totally different things for you, for me. That's the brilliance of that slogan. That's why that slogan works. That's why hope and change works. The more obscure, the more less concrete the slogan is, people make of it what they want.
Yeah, but I mean, during Trump's campaign rallies, you kind of figure out what "Make America Great" means. It means I can give you the five top things that it means, as far as like keep American jobs here, provide for more jobs as much as possible, provide for the economy, make sure that we don't actually grow government, decrease government. That's the kind of "Make America Great"
But you know, I
mentality
think
is.
that has been fleshed out, I think, more in the second term. In the first term, it
Oh,
was
okay.
more.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. It was more ambiguous in the first term,
Yeah.
but it wasn't. But it was a little. I just feel like it was more concrete than hope. I mean,
Hope and change, remember?
oh,
I don't know what that means.
it meant healthcare.
You know, that was such a waste of political capital. Like,
It
think
was the
about it.
worst. I mean, it was just like I said. I mean, like I said in previous shows on your show, it's like, after a financial crisis, I don't think people were worried about their health care. I generally think the majority were worried about having a job. Why would you spend all this political capital on trying to make health care completely uniformed?
But that's okay. At least the only benefit that we got from that was Republicans understood how to ram things down people's throats because Democrats did it in such a inartful manner. At least we learned from that and practiced for when it was our turn.
Yeah, we passed the tax reformation, which is amazing, which we rammed down Democrat. I don't think we got one single Democrat vote for
No, and I was like cheering
that.
them on. I was like, get the Vaseline out. Let's go.
But the funny thing is, you look at at all these at these situations, and it is just beyond me how Democrats don't get on the playing field, because Trump isn't a monolithic conservative. He's not this staunch, I believe in these values and only these values, and if you stray from these values, I will murder you. No, he's
No,
more
Trump believes in winning. That's the
correct.
only value he understands.
And I think there's a certain level of, I also don't want to be the strict person. I have an idea that all Americans should have a job, all Americans should live in prosperity, all Americans should not be oppressed by their government, and all Americans should continue life as normal, and provide the atmosphere for them to create amazing things. And in order to create that environment, his viewpoint, you don't believe that government provides that environment. People provide that environment. And if you give people the ability to do that, they will produce. And
So, I,
that's how I feel about it.
well, here's the thing. I agree with you, but we also have to acknowledge the following. Politicians don't usually have linear processes. If you run for office, it's not because you necessarily only want to help the world. Yes, that's one of your motivations. But there's a lot of ego in there because for you to say, I am the right person for the job.
Yeah, exactly. That's
They all have this. They all have this. So it's like, okay, so you're really into yourself. Got it. Okay, let's hear your pitch. Okay, that works. Okay, no, I don't think that works at all. So that's what that is. Remember, these were all the popular kids, the student body presidents, all the I'm into myself people in high school and in college. So remember that you can ask for good leaders. That's why I like people like George Washington who were unwilling ones, but ultimately, you're only going to get those that put their hat in the ring, so you're going to get what you're going to get.
That's true. That's true. And I think that in terms of having that kind of situation, I also feel like you people go in. I mean, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, for a multi-million or billionaire, since I don't see his taxes.
Hey.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It was a joke. It was, but the
I'll hang up on you.
for someone of that caliber of wealth to say, I am not going to continue making money for the next 4 years. I'm going to run for office and I'm going to win that office and I'm not even going to take a salary while I'm in that office. That's a huge sacrifice. That's not something, I mean, that's not something to take lightly. That's something to be acknowledged. It should be more acknowledged, actually. And
Imagine
he,
if a Democrat had done that. He would be like everybody's hero.
yeah. And on top of that, it's like, that's a form, that's an older, not Republican Party, but Republican America statute. So back in the good Republican years of our history, it was seen as a sacrifice to work for the government. The government did not provide salaries to none of its workers at the very beginning.
But
The
my
idea.
understanding, look, and this is important. So everybody who's listening out there, please. Government service, like you just stated, used to be a sacrifice. You are not supposed to get rich from government service, which makes no sense to me why you have people like Nancy Pelosi who came into government with one net worth and are now in a millionaires. So there's a misunderstanding of what the role of government employment it does for a person. It should be a sacrifice.
Correct. And the thing is that for a very long time, only the wealthy could only be part of that sacrifice because they're the only ones who can financially sacrifice for it. We provided, then they started providing salaries to government workers. And I'm not arguing that we shouldn't provide a salary to people. What I am going to say is that we need to realize that where does it stop being a financial burden to have you there and a financial sacrifice as opposed to actually producing your job? Because I think, honestly, Congress hasn't done its job for over 30 years now.
I agree, but I think that's a systemic issue. I'm hopeful though, as we get new blood into Congress, I'm not saying it's going to improve overnight, but I think younger generations, some of those issues that they will find new issues, of course, but some of those issues that were hardline issues, that's going to go away. Look what's happened with gay marriage and gay rights. Those issues evolve and different issues take their place, of course, but I think there's room for better camaraderie in the future as the older generations, step down.
Are you blaming the boomers?
Oh my God, I blame everything on boomers.
Oh, they're my favorite. They're my best clients.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with that, but that's another episode,
That's
right?
another episode.
But no, I love I okay, fair. Boomers had a lot of things going for them. They're probably one of the most confident generations. They're hardworking, but there's also some other issues. And yeah, millennials are not lazy boomers. You guys just have a very different perspective of what work means, and it usually means some type of torture.
Well, it's funny that it reminds me of, I don't know where I heard this, but it was like where someone says you don't where the someone says you don't have to you shouldn't have to work that hard, and someone's and I can imagine the boomer saying, well, it just no one said it should be that
Okay, boomer.
easy either.
Okay, boomer. So, yeah, I agree. But all right, so who would you like to see on the bench?
Well, here's you. We've had this discussion already privately, but I am not a fan of putting young blood in the Supreme Court. I would prefer someone over the age of 50 to go into the Supreme Court. And the reason why is because I don't like the idea of a lifetime appointment anyway. It's just not something I'm comfortable with. And to have someone who will be in their early 40s or even in their 30s to go to the Supreme Court would mean 30 years of that person to have the power that they have. And I don't I just I it, I don't know, call me whatever. I just feel I get tense when I think of that.
So here's the interesting part. Okay, don't discriminate against young people, okay? But there is,
I mean, if it's a lifetime appointment.
to quote Reagan, do not use their youth and inexperience against them, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Look, here's the thing. I don't mind putting somebody who's 48 or 52 years old on the bench as long as they have really good conservative credentials and have a spotless record. Problem is, you bring somebody on the bench that's in their 40s, late 40s, early 50s, and are already a moderate. What do you think is going to happen to that person once they've spent a few decades on the Supreme Court? It's going to be another
Fine.
Sandra Day O'Connor or a
Fine. Then
Kennedy.
put Rush Limbaugh. I mean,
No,
there are 50-year-old hardliners out there, for God's sakes.
that's right. That's why you need to look for someone. That's why I like I do like President Trump's short list as far as nominees go. I think you
But
have
it's
really good.
Lisboa. It's only between two, really. Lisboa and I forget her other name.
Isn't it Barnett?
Barnett, yes. I mean, I think
Yeah,
those are the two. He has to choose between those two.
I go for Barnett. I love my Cuban American. I'm a Cuban American myself, but I think Barnett had a much more contested confirmation hearing, and I think that's going to be a nice parallel to what she would confront this time around. And she stood up for herself and showed she had a backbone. LaGoya was very, I mean, she almost got overwhelming support. And that's not going to be that way again this time around. Not when we have a Supreme Court seat at stake.
And I think you have two things, right? I think a Cuban American on the Supreme Court is going to be a fantastic thing because we'll have a Hispanic representative as opposed to the current Latina representative.
You keep saying that, but Sotomayor is of Puerto Rican descent. That's not Latina, that's Hispanic. She's Caribbean.
No,
Same
because
thing.
she views herself as Latina. If
Well,
you ask her, I mean, let's face it. And for all the people who don't know, if you're Latin, and I mean, if you are of Hispanic descent or from Spanish descent, and you are a Democrat, you normally identify yourself with Latino or Latina. If you're a conservative Hispanic or Spanish descent, then you consider yourself Hispanic.
I'm not
That's
even
always
that.
been a
At that point, I like to use the denomination of where my ancestry is from because my experience and my culture and my personal view on things is shaped by the heritage of my parents. And in my case, I'm Cuban American, period.
Okay, I'll give you the here's your Cuban card.
No, I'm being honest. Look, both my parents are Cuban. That's the culture that I grew up in. I'm born in Miami, which is basically Little Cuba. Or I should say, I live in Miami, born in California, but whatever. There's a certain acknowledgement there. I am not Latin. I don't know what that means. I don't share a history with South America. I don't share history with Mexico. That's just a reality. And every time they try to put me in the Hispanic block, I'm like, I think that's a poor description of who I am and what my collection of experiences represents.
I think that if you, so I use syntax to determine the two. So Latino, the root word Latin, therefore means that anyone who speaks a Latin or derivative of Latin language is considered Latino because that's how you use syntax. That's how you describe words. You use the base word as the descriptor or the defining aspect of the word as in to a noun. So therefore, Latino doesn't make sense because then everyone would be, I mean, technically, all Southern European nationalities and descendants thereof are considered Latinos because they all come from derivative Latin-based languages.
It's a poor
I prefer
description.
it's, and yeah, exactly. It's a stupid one, right? Oh, well, you know, the French guy's Latino, the Italian guy's Latino because they have derivatives of Latin language that I don't understand where that comes from.
But
Hispanic, I.
even English has derivative of Latin language.
That's correct. That's correct. I was thinking more direct derivatives as opposed to, you know, Latin certainly plays a role in English
But
in
that
the
goes to my
20th.
argument, why it's such a poor description.
Yeah, exactly. But Hispanic, I think, is a more accurate one only because it literally means from Hispaniola, from Iberia, the actual areas where our ancestors came from. And
But that even doesn't explain it all because there's some Hispanics that have German, Italian. It's a problem. That's the problem. It doesn't. That's why I prefer give me Venezuelan American, Cuban American, Mexican American. That tells me more who you are.
But honey, I'm gonna have to say I am Cuban, Peruvian American. I get tired.
But that's who you are.
I understand
Are
that,
you gonna
but I'm
tell
not.
me that that's not who
Why
you
do I
are?
have? But why do I need like 15 syllables to
Because you're that diverse. Your background is that diverse. I mean, but here's the thing. Your experience as the son of Cuban and Puerto Rican parents, isn't that a very unique experience?
Peruvian, not Puerto Rican.
Sorry, Peruvian. Isn't that a unique experience?
It is a unique experience, but I think that there's a shared commonality to both experience. I mean, they both spoke Spanish, they both had similar cultures, and albeit not the same. Both groups came here hardworking, provided lives for themselves. I think there's a shared.
Politically, though, it's a very different story.
Well, my mom. My mom was the only one in that caveat that really went crazy. But in the but for the most part, all my grandparents are Republicans. So it didn't matter which side I was in.
Well, when
And
I'm
so,
saying politically, like the history of those countries is different.
yes, absolutely. And I th and you know the funny thing is that they both came here for two different reasons. And my grandmother from Peru just for came over here because of a divorce, and she was remarrying. And in Peru at the time, and this is in the 80s, that was looked very down upon. Divorce didn't really exist in South America. And so she couldn't get jobs. She found it hard to get jobs, found it hard to get a lot of things. So she moved to Miami in the United States with her new husband for a better, more prosperous life. So in a way, she was in the same. And not in the same token, but in the same kind of storyline, I'm leaving at a place of oppression to a place of freedom. And that.
That's a little different, though. Those are more like personal reasons. That's a little different from fleeing a country because they're about to kill you because you're not part of the government.
Well, but if a. But if the government, but if the country doesn't allow you to even have access to economics, I mean, sure, it's not immediate death, but it's certainly a long-lived, not a
Yeah, but it's
very
more of
fun
an
life.
economic argument, right?
It is an economic one, but it's economic because there was no avenue for women. I mean, it's women's rights kind of issue, right? There was
Right,
no avenue.
not trying to minimize your experience. What I'm trying to point out is that
It's
there.
not mine anyway. It's my
Well, no,
grandmother's.
what I'm trying to say is that there's a contrast, right, between coming for economic, social reasons and coming because of political persecution. One is not better than the other, and I mean, none of those are good, right?
Yeah, none of them. Yeah, exactly. No,
But
I get what you're trying to say. Absolutely agree with you. I'm not saying
because
that, but
that
what.
will shape the derivative political positions that come from it,
Sure.
because it's different motives, right?
Sure.
One came because she was being oppressed and she was limited in what she could do, and she felt that she would have a better life here, which is purely economic indicators in a way. And then the other people came here because, yes, they didn't feel like they had much options and there wasn't much of an economy in Cuba. That's an economic indicator. But then for the older generation, it was, they're going to kill me if I don't come over here because I'm not a communist. So
Exactly.
it's.
No, I absolutely agree with you. But what I'm trying to say is the shared experience was they sought this country as a place of opportunity, right?
I agree. Okay, fair.
That's what I mean by that. And they came hardworking, and they're both, and it's admirable because they're both in the same political party.
Well, viva Peru and viva Cuba.
Exactly. But well, I'm just trying to say that there's a fine, there's going, I mean, there's commonalities, and I really see that, and I got to see the American story, the true American dream being experienced by my family.
And
And
by
that's
the way, your family is lovely, so that our
thank you.
listeners know.
And so is yours.
Aw, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, he's coming over to my house for Thanksgiving this year, so we stole him
Yes.
from his family.
My family decided that they were going to do very separate things together. So I thought today, this year would be a good year to go ahead and be able to escape from doing things with the family. So I'm actually looking very forward to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, me too. I need to talk about the menu. Maybe that will be a separate episode where we talk
Yeah.
about. But
I
anyway.
expect no blue products on my dinner.
Oh gosh. Well,
Unless
Carlos,
if unless the election goes I'm depending on the election.
Well, we need to be positive, right?
Yes,
We need
absolutely.
to talk about, okay, so if Trump wins, there needs to be like a reward on Thanksgiving for that.
Sure, there
And
you go.
if Trump loses, we need like a consolation prize for that.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
both have to be good because they're both like pity parties. One is a pity party, one is, yay, we're awesome. So we need to think of something that to look forward to in both scenarios. But with that said, Trump 2020, we're gonna win. Make sure you
Yeah,
vote.
absolutely. I actually think I'm now more comfortable with the idea that it's not even a contest. And I think that will be more apparent once the debates
Right.
are underway.
Well, Carlos, thanks for coming on the show again. Our chats are
Absolutely.
always fun and interesting.
And I'm so happy to be part of it
Yes. So enjoy your vitamin water. Today's your day off, right?
Today's my day off. I'm going straight back to sleep.
Oh, wow. I guess that's why you had the vitamin water, right?
Yes. I do not want to stay awake.
No, I have to start. I don't have to be at work at by 8 a.m. So I'm gonna log off, but thanks for being on the show.
No
So
problem.
we'll talk soon, okay?
Talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
So, guys, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. And wow, this year is going by really quickly. So, September is almost over. We'll be jumping into October. FYI, Halloween is one of my favorite holidays. So, there'll be some content coming up on that. But thanks for tuning in and thanks for making this show such a success. You guys are awesome. And thanks to Carlos again for being on the show. Suffice to say, his conversations with him are always fun. So remember, guys, we are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us, Right Owl Politics, and you can hear all our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. So check us out if you have some time this weekend, catch up on old episodes. They're really good stuff. We're really proud of the content we're producing. And pretty soon we're going to be putting our episodes on YouTube. So that's going to be an interesting new way to enjoy our show. So, guys, again, thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. Spread the word. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So if you know anybody that wants to get their political news in a different way, send them in our direction. So take care. Have a great weekend. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye, guys.